Downloading.
Downloading.
Audio.
Nonstop.
Thanks for downloading the SOS Radio podcast.
Mark McMillan played in the NFL for 8 years with the Chiefs and the Eagles and the 49ers and the Saints. Nicknamed Mighty Mouse, several years ago actually established an organization called Camp 29. It works to serve the community and help young athletes realize their potential and just help them succeed at the highest level of the athletic potential. And Mark's joining us today at SOS Radio. How are you, Mark?
Oh, man, I'm good, man. I'm blessed to be here. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, I got to know the story behind Mighty Mouse. They gave you the name.
It happened in Kansas City. Derek Thomas got arrested, so he was the Falcon. Andre Rison, he was known as Spider-Man. And, you know, it just came about. I was a small guy. And, you know, Derek's like, hey, you know, we got to give you a character. You got to have a character name. So Mighty Mouse was the name that they came up with, and it stuck. And Kansas City just went crazy, man. You know, you had people coming to the games and dressed up in Mighty Mouse costumes. And, you know, little kids really loved it. They took off with it. And when I made a good play in Arrowhead Stadium, they actually played the Mighty Mouse theme song. So that was pretty cool. You know, it kind of stuck. Now every time somebody says Mighty Mouse, you know, it's like, I'm known as Mighty Mouse, so it's pretty cool. I just, you know, play along with it. Like I said, it was a time back in Kansas City that I had the opportunity to do some good things, and Mighty Mouse just stuck with me.
Yeah, especially with all those interceptions. This is like, boom, he is off. I saw that video from Alabama back in the day. It was like a 98-yard return on that interception.
Yeah, when 98 in Alabama, that record stood for a while, and then Drake Kirkpatrick, who was a one of the top defensive backs in the nation that got drafted by the Miami Dolphins. He broke the record a couple of years ago when he was at Alabama. So no better guy to break the record than one of the top picks in the NFL draft. So the record stood for a long time, and anytime you can do something good and have your name mentioned in the record books of Alabama, it's pretty good.
We're talking to Mark McMillan on SOS Radio today. He played in the NFL for 8 years with a lot of different teams. But tell us your story, Mark.
My story is pretty unique. Obviously, you know, from the first glance when people come in, and if I do a radio interview or television or doing sports camps, people don't realize I'm actually 5'8". You know, they see the guy that was on TV playing against some of the big guys. And, you know, there's, you know, when I look back, I was like, man, there's no way I should have been out there with guys at 6'7", 6'8", 300 pounds. And my playing weight was 145 pounds.
Wow.
I was considered Mighty Mouse, as you can say, but I was a small guy, you know, didn't play no youth football, picked up football my senior year of high school. My mom was like, hey, you know, we don't have any money to send you to college. So, you know, you're always talking about how good you are. You're running around the streets. You're fast. You can do all this. And you want to go to National Football League. And she said, why don't you go out, you know, for the team? So ended up going out for the team my senior year, and was sitting on the bench and was probably scared. I was probably like 125 pounds. Soaking wet as a senior in high school. And we had a really good team. Several guys actually played in the National Football League off our team. So we had a really special group of guys. And the guy that I end up replacing that tore his knee, he was one of the top cornerbacks in the nation. And when he got hurt, it was my time to step up. And things kind of worked out from there. And went to a junior college, Glendale College in California, and ran track. And decided to go out for the football team again. And
yeah, why not, right?
Decided Coach John Secudo, who's like a father figure to me, and we still keep in contact all the time, still to this day, went out and didn't get the playing time that I thought I was going to get. And after 5 or 6 games, I stormed out of practice, threw my stuff down, said I quit. He grabbed me by the back of my neck and said some things that, you know, a man have never said to me before, and, you know, kind of got my attention. And, you know, I stuck with it, and I ended up playing there for 2 years. My sophomore year, I ended up being a junior college All-American after 2 years of football, which was, you know, still people were like, man, where did this kid come from? Nobody still knew who I was, and, you know, I wasn't on the recruiting radar. And I think it was like the week 9 or 10, my sophomore year, I ended up getting injured. And I had to miss like the last 3 games. I had some strained ligaments in my spine, and, you know, a lot of schools backed off from me then. And signed a national letter of intent to the University of Pittsburgh, who stuck by me. You know, I was all excited going to college, first guy in my family, and I'm going to University of Pittsburgh. I'm going to be playing on national TV. And and all of a sudden, you know, I forgot about my grades, feeling myself like, man, I'm the first guy. I'm coming out of the neighborhood. I'm an All-American. I'm finally on top of the world. And, you know, my teacher comes in and says, the best I can do is give you a D. And I needed a C to transfer out of school. So I had to go back home and tell my mom after we didn't have the barbecue on Friday. I'm excited. My clothes are packed. The ticket is in hand. I'm like, man, I leave Saturday morning. So Friday, she tells me I didn't pass the class. So I had to go back to junior college for a whole nother semester just to take that one class, and all the schools just fell off the map. And I was like, man, I went from having like 10 scholarships to zero. After passing that class, University of Alabama came in, and sitting there with my coach, and, you know, back then I had a jury curl. You know, I don't know if some of you are listening back in the day, had the jury curl back in the day.
Soul
and,
glow.
Yeah, the soul glow. And a guy comes in, he said, hey, I want to, you know, see some film on Mark McMillan. And me and my coach, we're looking at each other like, why would they come all the way from Tuscaloosa, Alabama to look at a guy 140 pounds? You know, guys back east, you know, they come out of the wound at 140 pounds. So I'm like, hey, you know, that's me. And they're like, hey, you don't want to bring you down on a recruiting trip. And it just happened like it just happened so fast. And within a week, I'm on campus at University of Alabama. I'm looking at Cornelius Bennett, Derek Thomas. I'm like, man, these are guys. These are the guys. I made my mind up. I said, man, I'm going to go to Alabama. You know, I had an opportunity to go to USC, you know, UCLA, all the Pac-10 schools back in the day, University of Miami. So things start picking up after everybody found out I went to Alabama. They're like, wait a minute, is there something we're missing out on? And, you know, my loyalty was them. You know, they're the first one that stepped up and showed that they were interested. Like I said, I grew up in South Central LA, right down the street from USC. So my heart and soul was like, man, I'm going to play for USC. I'm going to be like Marcus Allen, you know, Charles White. You know, there's some great athletes that came out of University of Southern Cal. And when they came around late, they were like, oh, yeah, we want to offer your scholarship. You know, I was like, I've been on the block for like 6 months. Now, all of a sudden, you know, Alabama steps in the mix. And, you know, it was a hard decision, but I just felt time for me to get out of California, you know, get a whole new environment. And by the time I left LAX, Coach Bill Curry was the coach that recruited me. It was probably like a 4-hour flight. By the time I landed in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, I go walk through the dorm. Bryant Hall was our dorm, Bear Bryant. I see guys like crying. I was like, what's going on? He's like, you didn't hear the news? I was like, man, I've been in the air. Like, I don't, what's going on? I said, coach got fired.
Oh, no.
So I'm like, wait a minute. I was like, I just got here. Like, how can the coach get fired? Like, I'm on the plane and I'm excited, like, new chapter. And, you know, I call up my mom, collect, of course, like, we didn't have any, we didn't have any money. I'm like, mom, you know, the coach got fired. I was like, I want to come home. You know, I'm sitting there crying. I'm like a 19-year-old kid down south in the deep south in Tuscaloosa, of all places. And she was like, baby, you got to stick it out. You know, you can't come back here. You know, this is what you wanted. This is what you prayed for. You know, God opened up the door for you to have this opportunity. So I ended up sticking it out. And Coach Gene Stallings, they hired him on staff and brought him in. He was a no-nonsense guy. You know, he was a Bear Bryant, Junction Boy type guy. He coached under Tom Landry back in the day with the Cowboys and coached at Texas A&M. And so he was and still is, you know, tough as nails. You know, he put me over there with the walk-ons. And, you know, they didn't even know who I was. You know, I wasn't the guy that they recruited. So I'm over there with Dabo Swinney, who's now the coach for the Clemson Tigers. And I'm like sharing a locker with like three other guys. I'm like, this ain't right. So they were like, hey, man, you need to go talk to coach and let him know that, you know, you're on scholarship. So walked up to his office. It was probably like walking a mile because he had that presence like, man, this dude is like, he's intimidating.
Yeah.
So I'm like, coach, I'm on scholarship. And he looks at me, you know, with the long draw voice. And he's like, I didn't recruit you. And I'm like, all this stuff is just like happening. It's like nothing good is happening. And he said, okay, well, if you think you're worthy enough to, you know, play with the guys, you know, we'll bring you up with the scholarship players that I recruited and guys that was here before and see what you got. And that next day, man, I was hitting everything that moved. I was catching everything that went up in the air. And, you know, comes to me after practice. He said, you know, you can stay over here and be part of the team. He said, you're a pretty good player. And it just kind of took off from there and played 2 years at the University of Alabama and was all SEC my senior year. And I'm thinking like, man, I might have a shot to go to the National Football League. In my mind, I'm like, I'm going to make it in the National Football League. I said, I've been through enough. I said, if I'm, you know, come from California, I can start in the Southeastern Conference to play against some of the top teams in the nation, some of the top players. Not too many people gave me that opportunity. I didn't get invited to any of the Senior Bowls. I didn't get invited to the Combine. And for 2 months, I just put myself in a mind frame that I'm going to be in the best shape I can. I'm going to run the fastest 40. I'm going to jump the highest. I'm just going to blow everybody away. You know, I always tell this story to the kids is that I remember Ozzie Newsome was a guy that went to Alabama, played with the Cleveland Browns, you know, a Hall of Famer. I'm like, man, if anybody's going to give me opportunity, I'm an alumni. Ozzie's going to look out for me. He looks at me and he's like, there's no way you're going to make it to the National Football League. You're too small. And I'm looking like, and I said some things, you know, obviously I can't say on the radio to Ozzie. And I knew in my mind, I said, when we go out here and run, I'm going to just kill it. And we had some guys, Saran Stacy, who was a top pick, one of the top running backs. Kevin Turner was our fullback, God rest his soul. He passed a few years ago from ALS. So guys are running like 4.6 and 4.5s, and the scouts are like, yeah, they're excited. And I'm saying to myself, so I was like, I'm going to blow that out of the water. So my time was up. I had an opportunity to run, and first time I ran up, I ran a 4.24. Yeah, that's what the scouts said. Yeah. They said the same thing.
Okay. Checkmate.
Yeah, yeah. The scouts were like, hey, you know, can he do that again? And Coach Stallings was there, and he always said, you have an opportunity to play. He said, I know you can play in the National Football League. You've been under me for 2 years. I've coached in the National Football League. All the technique and stuff that we've learned over the years, you apply that, there's no reason why you can't make it on the next level. You're dang right he can run it again. So, you know, I ran the back-to-back 4.24. So we go and do the broad jump. We do the three-cone shuttle, and then we do the vertical jump. And I jumped 42 inches was my vertical jump. So then all of a sudden I went from, you know, this guy, you know, no one's to talk to all of a sudden I'm surrounded by, you know, college scouts. Like, hey,
you
know,
a contender here. Yeah.
So, hey, you know, what's your number? You know, what can we get in contact with you? And all my stuff kind of feed it through Coach Stallings. You know, he was like my guy that believed in me. You know, he's a coach that, you know, gave me some tough love and, you know, went through some tough times with him. But at the end of the day, he always had my best interest and he always had my back. So I had an agent. He came in the office. He was like, Coach Stallings, like, hey, you know, I know you're going to represent my guy. He said, I want to look out for every guy that comes through my program. I want to make sure that you guys are not trying to jerk these guys out of money. Mm-hmm. So the agent looks at him. He's like, yeah, I've been exploring some teams in Canada. And, you know, I don't think he's going to make it in the National Football League. This is my agent. So that day, before he left the office, I already signed a letter with the agent, so I was bound to him for 2 years. Okay. Coach Stallings said, after year one, you will be fired. And I'm looking at Coach. He's like, you don't need a guy like this to represent you that don't believe in you. And back then, you know, they had 12 rounds. Okay. So I ended up going to the Philadelphia Eagles in the 11th round. I walk in the locker room. I took all my gear with me, and I'm saying to myself, like, man, I'm not going back to Alabama. I'm not going back to California unless I have a job. And Reggie White, I walk into the office, walk into the locker room, and he looks at me. He's like, whose little kid is this in the locker room?
Oh, man.
Now, Reggie's probably like 6'6", 300-plus pounds, all muscle, and I'm looking at the minister of defense. I'm thinking to myself, like, I can't hit him. You know, I can't grab him. And I said some choice words to the minister that, you know, I shouldn't have said. But at that time, I was just a kid that was hungry that just wanted to make the team. And preseason went by, did pretty good, and ended up making the team and was like number 7th on the depth chart. So I was like, man, I'm in the locker room with, you know, Reggie White, you know, Jerome Brown, Randall Cunningham, Byron Evans, you know, some really, you know, Herschel Walker. I'm like, man, these are guys I was playing Tecmo Bowl with, you know, in my dorm room. I was like, man, I'm like really here. And they're like, man, don't get comfortable. You know, week in and just week out just kept going by and guys just kept falling down the wayside and I kept coming up the depth chart and I'm like, I'm in the mix. Like, I want it. Like, I was out there just, like, running around like I was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, a lot of guys are like, man, are you on something? Because every time I made a tackle or something, it was like I would run around the whole stadium. I was like, everybody look at me. Yeah, yeah. I was like, look at me. I'm here. I'm ready. I'm here to stay. It's like, man, this is – I'm living out my dream.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew my mindset was always – I'm an undersized guy. There was some kid out there that was just like me sitting in the top rafters like, man, I dreamed to play down on the big stage one time. And every time I took the field, I took that mentality of people are paying a lot of money to come see us play. For a guy that came from my background and my story, I knew people gravitated to that because everybody, every time I see, you know, I walk into a restaurant or people are like shocked, like, oh, my gosh, we didn't know you were that small. And I run out of the tunnel and people are just so excited and they're like, oh my gosh, it's like McMillan, and you know, the people are just excited. And I was like, man, people are like really fired up just because they probably was told that they couldn't do anything, or and I was, you know, they were living through me. And now second year, and now people are wearing 29 jerseys. I'm like, I walk into a sporting goods store and I see my jersey with my name on the back and I'm like, man, that's nothing but God, you know. So from my background and seeing the doors open up like that, and we're playing against the San Francisco 49ers, and there's Jerry Rice over here, and there's John Taylor, and there's Joe Montana, and Steve Young, and I'm like, this is it. And I'm thinking like, man, I'm number 2 on the depth chart now. I'm like, if somebody goes down, I'm the next guy up. And I'm thinking like, man, Jerry Rice needs one more touchdown to do break one of the many records that he already had. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah. I was like, man, if I get in the game and he breaks that record on me, I'm going to be on his highlight in ESPN for the rest of my life. And I'm thinking, like, I shouldn't be thinking like that, but I'm thinking, like, man, if this guy doesn't cut it, I'm next. The guy, he just wasn't cutting it. And Byron Evans, he was our middle linebacker, who's like our captain of our defense. He calls timeout in the middle of a heated game. We're like, we're going at it. And the coach is like, what the heck are you doing? He's like, get this guy out of there. He's like, put the rookie in. He said, at least he's going to compete. And the coach, Bud Carson, Bud Carson, God rest his soul. He was our defensive coordinator. He's the one that orchestrated the steel curtain back in the day. And he looks at me, and I was number 29 to him. So he was an old school guy. He's like, you have to earn to be called by your name. So he looks at me on the sideline. He's like, 29, you're ready? And I'm thinking to myself, because Jerry already scored the touchdown. They're carrying him off on the field. I'm like, oh, I'm good now. I was like, yeah, I'm ready. So he puts me in the game, and Jerry Rice is on the side. He's chirping in my ear. He's like, oh, this is the rookie everybody's been talking about. He's like, oh, this is fresh meat. And I'm saying to myself, like, man, you just don't know how hard it is to get to this place. And I'm here. I don't care who you are. I don't care what the name on your back of your jersey is. Like, I have a job to do. And I have an opportunity to do something really special. I have fans and I have my family in the stands. We're in Candlestick Park. I'm a California kid. I'm like, man, it's like I'm back home. Catches a pass. He goes for 15 yards. And I'm like, he catches another pass. And I tackle him. I grab his shoe and I throw his shoe off. And the referee gives me a 15-yard penalty. So I gave up 30 yards in two plays. So I'm thinking to myself, like, man, I walk in the huddle and Reggie White and them, all the guys, they're giving me high five. They're like, yeah, that's what we're talking about. We want somebody that's not going to be scared. We want somebody that's going to compete, that's going to just step up and challenge that guy. And from then on, man, I ended up starting like 6 years of my 8 years in the National Football League. And, you know, went from there to New Orleans. Didn't work out there. Me and Dicka, we didn't get along, and ended up going to Kansas City. In Kansas City, I had some of my best years. You know, I ended up leading the National Football League in interceptions. That's when the Mighty Mouse thing just took off. And I was like, man, it's just this is a blessing, man. And the same thing, like just walking in the stadium and seeing a little kid with a Mighty Mouse costume on. I'm getting Mighty Mouse magazines, and I'm, you know, it was so real. But, you know, I worked hard for that. I knew every time I stepped on the field, you know, in Kansas City and Arrowhead State, if you ever go there, the fans are like really close. So, you know, behind the bench, you know, you can actually interact with the fans. And everybody's like, man, why are you always talking to the fans? But to me, it's like every day I get an opportunity to live out my dream. I was like, man, you guys are supposed to make it. You know, you guys are big, fast, strong. You fit the criteria of the NFL guy. I said, I'm not even supposed to be here. So every time I take the field, this could be my last play. And I'm going to make sure every time I touch the field that I'm going to make something happen. If it is my last play, I'm going to give it 100% because I can't take it for granted. And, you know, I've been cut. I've been released. You know, I've been doubted. And then I end up going to Frisco, and Mariucci was there. And you know, all the battles we had against San Francisco, you know, I kind of carried that same mentality in the locker room. Everybody's like, man, just chill. Like, why are you just so intense and angry all the time? I was like, I'm not angry. I was like, I'm just here to get the job done. And me and Jerry, we just didn't get along, you know, from those days of just battling it out. And, you know, Terrell Owens had his old deal, and Ken Norton was a guy that I kind of confided in. He was like, man, the writing's on the wall. They're trying to get rid of you. And I was like, what are you talking about? I was defensive player of the week 3 weeks in a row. Yeah. Coach Mora, who's my guy, who was my coach in New Orleans, comes to me and he said, hey, you know, we got to release you. And I'm like, okay. So I knew I was going to give Mariucci the business. I was about to really give it to him because he didn't have the guts come in and tell me, like, you know, we're going to go a different direction. I was like, are the coaches there? He's like, yeah, some of the coaches around. I should have got a speeding ticket because I was speeding to go to the complex because I was about to let him have it. And by the time I got there, the only guy that was standing there was Coach Moore. And I was like, where's the coaches at? He was like, Lil Mac, they knew that you were going to come in here and give them all the business. He's like, it sucks because, you know, he brought me there. And I was like, man, I'm going to go play for my guy. I'm going to play for the 49ers. It's close to home. And end up, I think it was like probably 24 hours later, Denny Green called from the Redskins. Pittsburgh Steelers called. The Washington Redskins called. And I was like, and Denny Green, he's like, hey. He said, no better way to get back at your teammates. We play the 49ers this week. He said, we can get you in. We can fly you in Monday night. You know, you can practice Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And no better way to stick it to your old team. And I'm thinking, like, Minnesota? It's really cold back there in Minnesota. So So I know you guys got a good team. You know, that Chris Carter, Jake Reed. Mm-hmm. They had some John Randall. They had some really good players on their team. And Pittsburgh, I was like, I don't know anybody in Pittsburgh. And I was thinking, like, Washington and Dale Green gets on the phone. And, you know, from playing against the Redskins all those years with Philadelphia, he was like, man, come out here and play for us. You know, we need some help. And, you know, we need somebody. We need that one extra piece to get us over the hump. I was like, man, I was like, that's Dale Green, you know. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to Washington. You know, it's right down the road from Philly. I know the Eagles fans are not going to like it. Ended up, you know, playing in Washington. Ended up having to play against the 49ers to go, you know, to win the division. So I was like, and they knew. They knew. They was like, every time I had a blitz package, the offensive lineman, they already knew. They was like, Lil Mac, you are the last person we're going to let make a play because we know you would never let us hear the end of it. And we ended up winning that game. And it was an overtime game. And, man, I was just so relieved and so excited. It's like, man, this is karma. Like, you know, you just don't do people like that. You know, I know it's a business, and I understood the business early on. Like, man, there's, you know, everybody gets cut at some point. You know, everybody's going to get released. And, you know, once we won that game and Bill Walsh comes in the locker room, and he was one of the guys that kind of ushered me off, you know, God rest his soul. And we just didn't get along. And Coach North Turner, he's like, Lil Mac, he's like, Bill Walsh is going to come in here and he's going to congratulate us. He's like, please don't say anything crazy. Because I was like always the hothead guy. So Bill Walsh comes in. I just lost it. I was like, you such and such. I was like, get out of our locker room. And everybody's like, yo, chill out, man. We won the game. I was like, no, man, this dude, he didn't like me. Talked behind my back. And everybody's like, man, that's Bill Walsh. I was like, I don't care who he is. I'm Mark McMillan. So, and that kind of stayed with me. You know, after I didn't sign back with the Redskins, I went to Detroit. I was like, man, I ran a good 40, had a great workout. And I'm thinking like, okay, I'm going to be here. The coach comes in. He's like, the first question you ask off the bat, what happened to you and Bill Walsh? Now, you know, Bill Walsh was like the godfather of football. So he was like the mecca of all meccas. I'm thinking like, oh, man. So I had to explain it to him. And then they were like, well, we're going to go in a different direction. And I'm thinking like, wait a minute, I had a great workout. Like, I've been starting in the National Football League for a long time. And, you know, we actually played against the Lions in a playoff game and we crushed them.
Yeah, there have been a few of those.
It crushed them real bad. I had a really good game against the Lions. And the guy that was in Frisco that I ended up replacing, that was my backup, they ended up signing him in Detroit. And I was like, it was Donnell Walker.
Okay, Walker.
They brought him in, and then later they brought in R.W. McCorders, who was in San Francisco as well. Guy came from Oklahoma State, just a young guy, and kind of guy I took under my belt and tutelage him. And when I saw that, I was like, it went way back to San Francisco. It had nothing to do with my performance on the football field. And that was actually the last time I ever played in the National Football League. So that was an eye-opener to me. But I just couldn't sit back and let anybody just try to walk over me and just do me wrong, because I've worked so hard to be in this position, and it just didn't work out. But like I said, I was blessed enough to play 8 years in the National Football League. Not people, you know, people said I was never going to make it. So I was living out the dream.
We're talking to Mark McMillan on SOS Radio. I play with the Chiefs and the Eagles and the 49ers and the Saints. You're talking about a few minutes ago how you're always that hothead guy with something to prove. But God stepped in at one point and showed you a different perspective.
Yep. And like you said, it was nothing but faith. It didn't work out. Detroit. And I was like, man, what am I going to do now? And, you know, just kind of went away from my faith, was feeling myself. And so God said, okay, we're going to sit you down. When you think it's all about you, it's not about all you. And, you know, I lost a lot, you know, in that transition period from playing football to, you know, having a kid. You know, my last year in the league, I'm like, okay, I'll be able to provide for my kid. I'm thinking I'm going to play 2 or 3 more years. God's like, no, you know, you're done. And I'm like, wait a minute, I can't be done, you know. And, you know, we pray before we go out of the locker room. And then after the game, kind of forget about God. Like, Lord, please don't let me get hurt. Please let me make this play. You know, you're praying all through the game for 60 minutes. Then after the game, and, you know, you're out drinking and you're out doing things that don't match up with, you know, what you're supposed to be doing. You know, he took a lot. You know, took houses, took cars, hit rock bottom, you know, went through the depression stage. You know, what is life after football? It's like, man, you're in a structured environment so much, and all of a sudden you don't have to be at the meetings at 7 o'clock. You don't have to lift weights. You don't have to be in a meeting. You don't have to be held accountable. Now you're just sitting on the couch doing nothing. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, what do I do? You know, you were just so programmed. Depression is real. You know, a lot of guys go through it, but a lot of guys don't like to talk about it because, like, oh, man, depression shows a sign of weakness. You know, you got to be macho. You got to be strong. You know, I was one of those guys like, man, I'm okay. Everybody like, you're all right? Yeah, I'm okay. But I'm like, in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm really not okay. You know, I'm out in the bars, I'm hanging out with my boys, and that's not me. You know, that was never me to be out clubbing and hanging out. I was like, all of a sudden, here I am stumbling into the house, and my girl's looking at me like, dude, what is your problem? Like, you know, and my son is like, why is dad always asleep? And that kind of hit me like, man, you know, he's a young dude. He's like, he's not lively anymore. He's not out playing ball or, you know, running the street with me. And I was like, man, I've got to do something different. Got to change. And, you know, got back in my faith and surrounded myself with men of God, like, you know, Pastor Randall Cunningham. And he's always been in my corner. And he's like, okay, you're going to stray away. He said, but, you know, sooner or later, you're going to come back. And he said, you know, you're living the life now. You're out there partying. Everybody's still chanting your name and everything is good. He said, but God don't care about all that. You know, he cares about your heart. He cares about your soul. You know, when you're out there doing what you got to do, he knows, you know, the devil is crafty. You know, in the back of your mind, man, that's not right. You want to just fit into that crowd. It's like, oh, I want to do what my boys are doing. It's 15 years later. Like, you're not Mark McMillan, the football player anymore. You know, you have a different calling. You know, you have opportunity to do some things really special in the community. You know, use your faith to the best of your ability because you're not here. You know, we can be gone tomorrow, yeah. You know, and the last thing you want to do is be blessed with all that talent. He's blessed me with tons of money, cars and houses and labor to provide for my family. And now you're out here blowing it all away because you want to feel yourself. You know, once I hit rock bottom, man, and there's no worse feeling than when you hit rock bottom, you're down on your knees and you're crying and you're just, you know, some days I would just sit on the couch and just thinking like, and just start bawling. Yeah. It's like, man, God is just like, he's like right here. He's like, the devil's like right here. And I'm like, nah, I've been there. I've lived that life. I know what comes with that. And I know what comes with my faith. I was like, man, it's much greater over there. It was just a process. And I just picked up and moved on to Arizona. You know, some of my boys are still calling today. They're like, we see you taking pictures in Las Vegas. Like, what happened? I said, man, I just had to change everything. You know, I had to leave a lot of stuff that I was doing behind because that no longer served God. It wasn't pleasing to God. It wasn't pleasing to me. Wasn't pleasing to my family. Definitely wasn't pleasing to my daughter and my son and my girl. You know, she was like, just, I don't even know who you are. And then, you know, just constant prayer with my mom on the phone. And, you know, my mom's getting older and, you know, she's that old Baptist lady that's always giving me a scripture every day. And she's like, you were born in the church. My uncles were ministers. So we grew up in the church and I knew right from wrong. I knew 5'8", 145, 150. That's not me, you know. Everybody say, oh, you're a fast, you're a this, you're that. And that was nothing but God. You know, he blessed me with those abilities because no one else, you know, played in the National Football League in my family. No one played in the NBA. I never knew my father. I see my father one time. You know, I'm 49 years old. And, you know, the only father I really know is the father up above. And that's the one I call on. And that's the one that's always delivered. I know I can call on him anytime, any day, you know, ask him for forgiveness for my sins. And, you know, and just forgiving other people that have wronged on me, you know, because I've always held that grudge like, oh, this person done me wrong. So I'm just going to just be mad at him for the rest of my life. I'm like, no, you just got to just release that and give it to God and let him fight those battles.
We're talking to Mark McMillan on SOS Radio, and he played with the Chiefs and the Eagles and the 49ers and the Saints. And when you're in a highly competitive situation and a highly accountable environment in the NFL, a lot of your teammates, they're always jockeying for a position. They're trying to one-up everything you do because that's how they stay on the team, right. And that's how they move other people out. But you learned really quickly that you needed some mentors when you started with the Eagles in Philly, and today that's why you want to be a mentor to a lot of the high school students and the college students that are going through that grind right now.
Like I said, God opened up the door for me to have an opportunity to work the blue-gray football. Gus Bell is the CEO. He's out of Boston, Massachusetts, and just had a phone conversation with him about 5 or 6 years ago, and he was like, hey, you know, we heard you were doing some camps with some kids, and you're looking to get back into football, and I was like, yeah. Just kind of evaluated from just being a regular guy on 2 or 3 combines, and now I'm up to like 15 to 20 combines that I'm doing. And a lot of people say I'm like kind of like the face of blue gray because, you know, if you see most of the pictures, I'm in almost all the pictures. But I don't see it like that. Like I said, I don't try to give myself too much of the credit. Like I said, I got to give all the credit to God, you know, because he's blessed me with this platform. And I know I have a platform that a lot of kids are looking at like, man, if he can do it, then I can do it. Everybody's not going to make it to the National Football League. Everybody's not going to be a millionaire, you know, but you do have an opportunity, a gift. Everybody has a gift. First of all, you got to help others, you know, give back. You just can't just take, you know, and if God blesses you with something, you know, there's It costs us nothing to bless somebody else. You know, it doesn't cost me anything to pull a kid to the side or call a parent on the phone and talk to her kid about education, because that was one of the things that held me back. And a lot of kids just look at TV, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to play forever. Look at Tom Brady. You know, he's a rare breed. You know, everybody's not playing 15 or 20 years. And whether you go junior college route, which is the route I took, there's Division II, Division III, there's NAIA, there's tons of universities out there that would like for young men to come out and play for their university and go to school for free. That's the bottom line. Yeah. You know, if your parents don't have to go to the bank every month and write that tuition check for books, you know, take advantage of that. And, you know, some of these kids, they'll pass up on opportunity just to go walk on at a university and have to pay a whole year. I'm like, you know, you're chasing something that might not happen. And here's a school that's going to give you money for books and room and board, and your parents can still come up and, you know, don't put your parents in a bind. And I'm always preaching that to kids, because everybody's like, oh my God, you played at Alabama. I know I can play at Alabama. Like, chances are you playing at Alabama are very, very slim. A lot of stuff got to line up. You know, things were lined up for me to go to USC, and that just turned upside down. That door closes, and all of a sudden Alabama opens up. So you never know, you know, what God has in store for you. Once he opens up that door, you know, have the faith and just walk through it. You know, if you have the faith in it and just stay with it, you know, good things will come with it. You know, everybody wants to predict the future. Like, oh, I want to see what's going to happen 2 years from now.
Yeah.
Where's my life going to be 3? No, worry about like today. Only thing we can control is today. We can't control tomorrow, because tomorrow's not promised. You can be the best player you can be today. You can be the best CEO. You can be the best police officer. You can be the best radio DJ today, you know, because tomorrow we may wake up and be like, man, they just did an interview yesterday, because guys are, you know, dropping like that. But today, I'm here today, and I'm going to make the best of today. You know, whoever I can help today, you know, who's ever listening to this message, somebody might be battling some depression and be like, you know, I'm a little nervous. No, I went through it. In that mode, I was crying on the couch. I didn't know what was wrong. I had to go get counseling. I had to get help. You know, it's like, oh, you're strong. You're a football player. That doesn't mean anything. That was just a job. You know, this is real life. Now I get to travel the country. Every weekend I'm on the road, different venues, and helping these kids with college recruiting, and hopefully reaching out to some of these universities and giving some of these kids that don't have the platform or the money to go to all these college camps and showcases, try to put those kids in contact with coaches, because recruiting is a whole nother ball game now. Social media, you know, with Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, you know, coaches don't even really have to go to a school anymore. They can just look on their phone and look at a kid highlight. They'd be like, oh, I want this kid. It's like, you just saw 2 minutes of the kid. Like, those are his best plays in 2 minutes. Like, you got to be able to evaluate a kid and see what you're really getting. You know, a lot of kids I've turned down from the game because I'll go on their social media page and it's like, first I'll say, you take it down. I give them my opportunity to say, you know, clean it up, take it down. I'm not going to put my reputation on the line and say, hey, coach, I think you should recruit this kid. And you've got yourself doing God knows everything under the sun that you ain't supposed to be tweeting. It's like, once you push that sin, young man, you can't get it back. And you may get an old school coach like, I don't want to deal with that for 4 years. Give me that kid that, you know, I know I'm going to get a good kid that's going to be a positive to the program and represent himself, represent their university, represent his family. And a lot of these kids don't realize, like, man, a name on your back, you represent your mom and your dad. Like, you ain't just representing yourself or that number on your front or their university. Like, when you turn around, a lot of these kids know, like, you have a parent in the stands that had the same last name, and you're a reflection of that parent. You know, well, kids need to realize that. And just the social media deal, man, it's just blown up. It's like, and as adults, you know, sometimes we get so caught up in it and, you know, kind of lose track. And like, you know, let me put that down for a little bit. And I tell those kids that you should be spending more time trying to do something positive rather than posting it on social media. It's like, hey, look at me. Hey, look what I did. Go to a children's hospital. Go to a veterans hospital. Go to one of these events where there are special needs kids at. And I've always took my kids to the children's hospital all the time to see, like, dude, you're very fortunate. Like, a lot of these kids are not coming out. You know, there's a place in Arizona called Ryan's House, which is hospice care for kids. That's it. You know, he gets it. He knows, obviously, he's a young 19-year-old kid. He's going to buck the system. He's going to try to learn. But at the end of the day, he knows, like, man, Dad, like, I am really fortunate. And, you know, you see this kid one day, and then we go back the following week. It's like, you know, he didn't make it. It's like, man, that was the same kid that was bubbly and smiling. It's like, yeah, it was his time. like I said, we're just fortunate, and I'm thankful and blessed that you guys have me on the show and gave me an opportunity to share my story. And hopefully somebody out there will be touched by the story and help them out, you know. So like I said, I love it, man. And I, like I said, I'm a firm believer. I know my platform speaks to a lot of people because I'm just a regular guy. I'm not the big guy that people say, like, oh my gosh, he's a big football player. I'm the guy that people can actually come up and talk to and kind of live through that. And, you know, still today when kids pull up my highlights, they're like, oh my gosh, coach, you're a baller. I was like, what do you think, of a chopped liver? Yeah. You know, so it's still cool. And like I said, I have fun with it. And being able to move back here to Las Vegas and, you know, hit the ground running and be able to bring a combine and camp to Las Vegas is just another door that's just opened up for young men out here.
We're talking to Mark McMillan on SOS Radio, and he's played in the NFL, and he leads Camp 29, but you didn't actually play football until you were a senior in high school, so I want to hear your opinion on youth sports today, because whether our kids play Little League Baseball or club soccer, or you do a rec flag football team, it gets real competitive real quick, and all these club teams try to sell us as parents, oh, you need to be in our club, and we have the elite coaching. Don't play high school football. Don't play high school soccer. Don't play high school baseball. Play for our team and the tournaments where all the recruiters are. This is how you get a college scholarship. And everybody has an opinion, but you've gone through it early on. And you've gone through it now where you actually help run the Blue Gray Combine that actually leads to the All-American Bowl for football.
I saw a clip on Twitter, I think it was this morning. It was like a little league game. And there were parents like running out of the stands.
Yeah.
And they were like,
throw down.
It was like UFC on the baseball diamond. And I'm thinking, what kind of message are you sending to these kids? Obviously, the kids are probably looking like, man, that's my dad. That's my mom. But you ride into the game, good sportsmanship. You know, shake the player's hand, you know, be a good kid. Kids got to be looking at dad like, is that what I'm supposed to do, dad? When I get called out on strikes, just turn around and just punch the umpire, you know, because things didn't go my way. And there's so many things about youth sports alone. A lot of it is a money grab. Youth sports, I didn't play any youth sports, but I see it's even worse. I probably wouldn't say it's worse because it's getting filmed more, just like society as a whole. People are like, oh, man, it was happening. It was just not filmed. You know, we just didn't have camera phones. And, you know, every time you see something, people are like, they're filming at all times. So it's like, man, you got to really watch what you do and watch what you say nowadays, because social media will just blow it up. And, you know, you'll go from a good guy to a villain real quick by a send button. And parents just need to just chill. Kids are 7, 8 years old. And even the youth football leagues, they're year round now. The kids should not be playing football year round. Just doing a lot of researching with the Children's Hospital and talking to the doctors, kids' brains not even fully developed to like 18 or 19 years old or something like that. And I'm thinking, like, there's so many kids that he saw come through the Children's Hospital. You know, parents like, oh, my kid has a headache, he's fine, give him an aspirin. No, your kid has a concussion. But they don't know it because they're just thinking, like, little Johnny, you know, he's got a headache because he went head up with a kid. But now, you know, your kid has some brain damage, you know, broken bones. You know, kids should not be walking around with a cast on at 9, 10 years old because he's playing tackle football. And there's nothing wrong with flag football. There's nothing wrong with t-ball. There's nothing wrong with those sports to teach a kid how to be fundamentally sound, teach them how to respect the game at first, because once you get the pads and get competitive, the whole ball game changes. You got coaches yelling in the kid's ear, and you got that coach who never played, who's living out his dream. And, you know, it's like, oh, man, if I wouldn't have got hurt, I hear that story so many times. Oh, my gosh, dude, I would have tore you up if I would have been playing. If I wouldn't have got hurt, if I wouldn't have had kids when I was growing up, I would have made it to the league. I was like, yeah, but you did those things, and it just didn't happen. So I don't want to hear that soapbox story. And you know, don't take it out on these kids, because you see these coaches and things like Little Tykes. There's some kind of show that's on TV, and they're, like, cursing these kids out. And it's so competitive. And it's like, man, these kids are, you know, we want them to be kids, but we're yelling at them like they're adults. And some of the adults need to just chill, let these kids just be kids and have fun. They're taking the fun out of sports. And that's why a lot of the organizations are trying to take away tackle football. And the parents are like, there's no way you can take away tackle football. Like, it's not the end of the world. You know, you go back east, lacrosse is like the biggest thing back east. And you can get a scholarship in lacrosse. You can get a scholarship in tennis. You can get golf. You know, there's a whole genre of things that you can do, and just parents like, oh, my son to be a football player. No, just let him play. Let him, if he wants to be soccer, let him play soccer.
Yeah, what's interesting is that I find most of the professional athletes that have come through and chatted with us here on SOS played like 5 or 6 different sports in junior high and high school. And then one of them they got recruited for, like you, senior year of high school, is, oh, hey, why don't you come play for this college? You know, and then 2 years later, hey, you get a transfer to, hey, we'd like to recruit you over to Alabama. And you're like, I'm going to play at football for 3 years at this point. And then you go over to the Philadelphia Eagles and get to play with Randall Cunningham. It's like, wow.
Yeah. I was on the fast track. You know, like I said, after 4 years of organized football. You know, I'm in the National Football League. And you see, like I said, they start like 6 years old, 7 years old. It's like, man, these kids are playing more football by the time they get to junior high school than I've played, you know, my entire life. And it's just not good. Like I said, just let them play. If a kid wants to be a swimmer, a diver, wrestling, you know, there's tons of sports out there that can actually help you in a different sport.
You were running, you were playing basketball, you're pulling out the baseball and the bat out with your friends growing up and still playing a lot of sports. It just wasn't organized football at that point. But the athletic nature of what you were doing led you to that place where you got a shot.
Yep. And like I said, I played basketball, I ran track, I played baseball, you know, played soccer. You know, you go to the park and you just play. Nowadays, you go to a park and it's a ghost town.
Yeah.
There's nobody at the park. And, you know, the only person you're going to see at the park is the birds. And it's like, man, you know, now virtual reality games, guys don't have to go. They can just play with their boys on video games now. So it's just a different time. And obviously, you know, we have to adjust because it's not going to go back to the days where the parks are full and kids just need to be grounded. You know, they need structure. What Randall is doing over the next couple of months, he's having a youth camp. And, you know, he's got his son back home, Randall Cunningham Jr. His daughter, Vashti, is one of the top high jumpers in the world. He's got another high jumper. They're like 1-2. They're like ranked in the top 10 in the world.
Yeah,
so,
she was in the Olympics. Yeah.
So he's opened up a sports camp, and then there's like little kids and there's older kids. And you walk into the gym and they got a singing class. They got a cooking class. And they got sports. You know, they got all kinds of stuff. They got a Bible devotion class. So it's like a rotation that these kids go through all day. So they get fed a lot of different things. And it's not just like a football camp or a basketball camp. They're getting skills to be so many other things. Like me now, you know, Grillin' McMillan, that's a website I have. I have my own seasonings. I love to cook. I'm a foodie. You know, this is probably the worst place I could move because there's tons of restaurants over here. So next time you see me, I might be like 200 pounds, you know, so. But he's doing a great thing over there at Remnant Ministry. Like I said, he's been in my corner. He's going to be my best man in my wedding, July 30th at the Mandalay Bay. So I'm tying the knot to my fiance. So I'm excited about that too.
We're talking to Mark McMillan on SOS Radio, and he leads Camp 29. He works with the Blue Gray Combine. He was actually coming up here this week, and you have all Americans from all over the country coming through, and you and a bunch of other NFL greats are going to be just running them through the grind. Huh?
Yeah, we're excited. It'll be next Thursday at McCarran Park. We'll be out there from like 6 to 9:30, so we'll be putting the kids through the same drills that we've went through during the Combine, and we're going to be selecting kids to play in the 4 All-American games, which they'll be televised nationally on ESPN. So what other better place to play on national ESPN? We have 2 games in Dallas at Cowboys Stadium. Obviously, I'm an Eagle. I really don't like stepping into that stadium. But, you know, 2 games in Dallas. We have 1 in Tampa in Raymond James Stadium in January. And we just picked up the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, home of the Atlanta Falcons. So we have 4 key games that, you know, these kids have an opportunity to play for or play in, and I'm the head coach in Dallas for both games, and George Teague is the other coach on the other side, and everybody knows George from knocking T.O. off the star, so that's like his claim to fame. And, you know, one of our poster guys was Patrick Mahomes, and, you know, when we had the opportunity to select him and have him participate in the bowl week in Dallas, you know, no one thought he was going to turn up to that. Now, you know, seeing what he's done on the national stage is rewarding. You know, just remember calling that kid 5 years ago, like, hey, you know, you're playing in any All-Star games? And he's like, no. And I'm thinking, like, you're one of the top quarterbacks in the country. I was like, man, I would love to have you, you know, playing our Blue-Gray All-American game in Dallas. He's like, sure. You know, for that phone call, to see that, like I said, that's the highlight of me and being able to do this job is to see these kids go to college. And then, you know, he was blessed enough to play in the National Football League, not only play, be the MVP of the National Football League. So, you know, we're excited. Rondo Cunningham usually coaches the quarterbacks when we're out there. Byron Evans played a long time in Philadelphia. He'll be coaching the linebacker. So we have a really good staff that'll be out there next week. It'll be under the lights. So parents, you know, you don't have to worry about bringing your umbrellas. Just bring lots of water, be hydrated. And, you know, say, it's exciting for me to be able to be here in Vegas and be able to bless some of these kids and hopefully, you know, select some of these kids to play in the All-American game.
Yeah, it was cool. I was sitting at Buffalo Wild Wings with a friend of mine last year, and that was on the big screen. And afterwards, they bring a lot of the kids in, and they're like, hey, setting out. There's like Roll Tide hat over here. Yeah. There's an Auburn hat over here. There's a Florida Gators hat over here, you know. And it's like, which one you want? Scholarships are on the table. And student grabs the hat. And he's like, Chiefs, man. It's like Roll Tide, baby.
Yeah, that's a whole nother fad, you know, that hat game. I tell these kids, I was like, you know, maybe I guess I'm old school. I was like, you don't have to broadcast. You don't have to have a big showcase because there's, if you have four or five hats, there's three or, you know, four schools that's sitting there waiting like that's not going to get it. You know, it's like, don't do that to the university. Just, if you know which school you're going to go to, pull out the one hat, put the hat on, don't play the charades game. And I know it's fad now, but, you know, I'm not a big fan of the hat game. But whatever floats their boats, you know, that gets it. You know, obviously, you know, these kids work hard. You know, I mean, they don't just – scholarships don't just happen. You know, obviously a lot of doors have to open up and align. And like I said, I'm excited. And then obviously during my Camp 29 training, Randall was gracious enough to let me use his facility. He actually has a facility across the street from the church. I don't know if he had an opportunity to get over there, but
it's
a world-class facility. So he's got a weight room.
Gazelles running and track team as well.
He's got the track team. They run Friday and Saturday, so we're excited about that. One of his younger daughter, Gracie, who's a two-time state champ already from Silverado. She's got two more years left in high school. And then he's got another little one, Sophia, who's in elementary school. So I'm like, you're next, you know. So it's exciting to see all the athletes come through. The last couple of days, he's been actually working out Chris Tucker. So we're walking in, and I was like, is that Chris Tucker? You know, he's in there working out. He's in there getting in shape. Obviously waiting for another movie to come his way. And it's just a great environment over there, man. And like I said, he's let me use his facility to train two young men that's actually going on scholarship to Portland State. So, you know, free school for those young men. And I get a kick out of seeing these kids and then just have that drive. And like, man, to get to that next level, you have to have that drive. And that young man, he works out twice a day. He works out with me, and then he works out with the track team. So this is a kid that's his mentality is a whole different level. And it's 110, 130 on that AstroTurf out there at the facility. But this kid's like, man, I want it, coach. And, you know, those are the kind of kids that I get excited for. And whenever he calls me, he's like, you know, I can be at home. He's like, coach, we training today? I was like, yeah, let's get it, you know, because I didn't have that opportunity. I didn't have those doors open up for me. And now I have the platform to do that, and I try to use it to the best of my ability.
Thanks for listening to the SOS Radio Podcast with Scott Harreld. If this discussion encouraged you, feel free to share it with your friends on social media.